A COVID crisis is underway in western New South Wales as the Delta variant of COVID-19 spreads rapidly through largely unvaccinated remote towns and communities. Wilcannia, a community of 720 people, had recorded 69 coronavirus cases as of Monday. That is the highest transmission rate in New South Wales. And a man from Dubbo died this week after contracting the virus, becoming the first First Nations man to die of COVID-19. There are grave fears that the crisis that is crippling remote New South Wales will spread to other communities. Here's the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison.
In many remote communities, because they feel like they're a long way away from the cities where these things are happening, they can sometimes form a view that they're protected. And that's not the case. The Delta variant can travel, as we know it does.
Prime Minister Scott Morrison there. Now for Yawuru man and West Australian Senator Patrick Dodson. The fears are far too close to home.
And I'm very worried about what's happening in New South Wales with the Aboriginal people in that part of the world. And I'm more than worried about the Kimberley and Western Australia. Because if this thing gets into our communities, it'll kill us. It'll kill many of us, even young people as well as old people. So you've got to go and see your medical service, see the health people, get the vaccine. Tremendously important for our future and for our lives today. Otherwise, we'll have no tomorrow.
Senator Pat Dodson joins me now. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning, Sophia.
Senator, before we get started, I do have to acknowledge that I used to work for you, but this isn't about politics. This is not about the party politics. It's about the health of First Nations people. So let's get started. When you look at the vaccination rates in the Kimberley, they differ hugely from community to community. Warman, for example, had vaccinated 80% of their population in just 2 days. Other communities have been much slower on the uptake. How do you explain that?
Well, there's probably a number of explanations. The more alarming figure, I think, is that there's only 15% or so that have been fully vaccinated in the Kimberley and the Pilbara. So we're the lowest across the country in terms of being fully vaccinated. And there's only 25% who've had their first vaccination. Now, the reasons for this is obviously a number of things: the availability of the vaccines, the capacities to communicate and to work with the local communities, the RFDS and the Aboriginal Medical Services are working together to try and get the Pfizer vaccine into these communities. People need to understand and need to be helped to understand why the basics, as well as the biomedical model, that is, why do you need to have space between people? Why do you need to wear masks? Why do you need to wash your hands? Why do you need to have restrictions on movement? Some of these concepts aren't fully understood, and people then think, well, we don't see the consequence of the any kind of virus, and they won't until it becomes pandemic, until it actually hits the place. So preparing for the inevitable, which will happen, it will happen in the Kimberley, it will happen in the Pilbara, as we've seen in Western New South Wales, is that there's a need to marry up the cultural components that are important, and that's a role for our organisations, our cultural leaders, for the people who have, a good grasp of the Western imperatives that are required here. But it's also a capacity question for our clinics. Most of them aren't prepared. They're not resourced enough. We've got to have a clear strategy to deal with a crisis, and people need to understand that strategy before the crisis hits. So getting the vaccine is one thing, but then a strategy to deal with what happens when the crisis arrives. I mean, in Dubbo, children were being taken into the hospital along with their infected carer. Now, that's not acceptable. We've got to have a system to deal with the social outcome of these things for these communities. How does transport deliver into these communities? How do people get evacuated? You know, what are the logistics? What's the frontline triaging? These are just matters that we've become a bit complacent and we think that this is all the Commonwealth's responsibility. The Commonwealth has failed. This has dismally failed Aboriginal communities across this country to roll out the vaccines and to help communicate the seriousness of this this virus and its consequences.
Senator, you mentioned there that we need to look at a marrying of cultural understanding and Western science in all aspects of communications with First Nations people. What could that look like, or where have you seen that happening where it's worked well?
Well, I think I'm not sure whether it has worked well anywhere, because you know the question of funerals is a big issue, and there has to be discussions now with the Law and Culture Centre, with the leaders in the communities, to understand the implications of large gatherings of peoples who may be required by cultural obligation to attend funerals. But it's no good doing it when the crisis of a death has occurred. So you've got to start preparing and assist the police and other people who have the responsibilities to try and, you know, deal with movement of individuals. So those discussions should be taking place now. Plans should be put in place for each of these little towns. The isolation of loved ones when they get ill and their children, what happens to them. All of those things need to be understood, and a plan around it needs to be comprehensively understood at a local level. Now, there's some good work that was done and is being done by the medical services and by Nina Lingari at Fitzroy, and they're working closely with the West Australian health people. But, you know, there needs to be far greater collaboration, far greater information given to the local communities. That includes Broome and Derby and Fitzroy Crossing and, you know, Port Hedland and Warburton and other places of what's to be done in the face of an outbreak. You know, we had a case in Broome where a woman broke quarantining and was just lucky that she didn't test positive. If she had tested positive, the devastation on a town like Broome, what happens? We'd lock the place up.
Senator, we hear a lot about vaccine disinformation, misinformation and fear of the vaccine being one of the driving forces, perhaps preventing people from getting vaccinated. What are you hearing from people? Where are these fears coming from? Do people raise their concerns with you?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about religious groups creating fear and mistrust, misunderstanding. Those religious leaders, if they're out there perpetrating that kind of view, are doing a great disservice, not only to themselves, but to the community. And I'd call on all these religious leaders across the board to come together and express a view so that those that want to stand outside of that are clearly identifiable and their particular ideology or dogma can be seen for what it is. So, you know, there's a role here for the churches to get together and their leadership to say, well, this is what this group of people are saying is quite wrong. And the science is telling us, the medical people are telling us, that this is going to have serious consequences for all age groups if you're not vaccinated. And that you've got to get vaccinated at least to give yourself a chance. And if you don't take the chance, then, you know, you're going to infect other people as well.
Senator, you raised a point earlier about the layers upon layers of information that needs to get out into communities to effectively deal with what will come. What are you telling your family across the Kimberley?
Well, I'm telling them to go and get vaccinated. I mean, it's critical. You know, I've got a couple of two older sisters, older brother, and they're all gone and got vaccinated. They're very conscious of the fact that you know, when they're visited by their grannies and others, that kids have got to be careful, you know, distancing in the home and being respectful. But then, you know, they're thankfully still a bit mobile and they can speak for themselves. But they've at least taken the opportunity to get vaccinated. I think they're all been on AstraZeneca. But, you know, there are new vaccines coming. Moderna's coming sometime. We don't know when. I mean, this is the fault of the Morrison government. This should have been done months and months and months ago.
Senator, an Aboriginal man died this week in Dubbo. He contracted the virus and he was unvaccinated. Do you think that his passing has sent a message to First Nations Australia about the real risk of the virus?
Oh, look, any death is a sad thing, and I feel very much for the family of that particular man. It's a devastating thing. The record rates in the prisons, it's only going to be a matter of time before someone dies in one of those prisons over there. You know, it's disgraceful that the outbreaks even occurred in the prisons. I mean, you couldn't get a more confined group of people to put the needle into, you know, to help prevent this, and they've failed. And that's it. Little happened. The majority of people in the prisons in the Kimberley and the Pilbara are Aboriginal people. What's the vaccination rate amongst them? Zilch, virtually.
Senator, you talked well about the need for this layered communication strategy to get people understanding what the risks and concerns are and all the ways in which people interact in communities and how all of that will need to change. But vaccine is the first step. Is that what you're saying?
Well, vaccine's the first step. It's part of the opportunity to diminish the impact of this virus. Without vaccine, you will suffer terribly and eventually die if you don't get the access to the kind of treatment. And what I'm talking about is the capacity. If the Broome Hospital had 40 or 50 sort of people evacuated to it, how are they going to cope with it? And so what happens? Where do they go from Broome to Perth, and how do they get there? You know, these are the matters. I know the police commissioner has been taken offline to start to turn his mind to the logistics of all of these things. It's a big job, and we ought to be supporting him. But we've also got to know at the local level that our local facilities aren't going to be placed at risk because we're ill prepared. You know, where's the alternative location for the triaging if people are brought into Broome to assess whether they should be put into intensive care or taken to some other location?
Senator Pat Jodson joins Mornings this morning. If we could turn to another matter briefly now, the WA government's Aboriginal Heritage Bill, Senator, it's been met with some concern. People from the Kimberley Land Council travel to Perth to protest the bill outside the WA Parliament. They've criticised it as not going far enough to protect Aboriginal heritage. Where do you stand on it?
Well, I'm currently sitting on a national joint house committee that's been inquiring into the destruction of the Juggan Caves. And we're almost completed our taking of evidence. And we're about to deliver a report in October. And we've delivered an interim report, which I obviously support, the recommendations made in that interim report. And we've been constantly trying to get the industries to back up their words of wanting to change. The big problem you've got in Western Australia is the operation of Section 18 of the Aboriginal Heritage Protection Act, which gives the minister the discretion to approve the destruction of sites in his own capacity, on the minister's own capacity. That has to go. That has to go. The time of that sort of discretion isn't in line with our United Nations Declaration undertakings and the Declaration of Indigenous Peoples' Rights. Of free, prior and informed consent. If you're going to have free, prior and informed consent, it means that the First Nations people, the Aboriginal people, need to have a capacity to say to developers and to the government, we are not going to let you destroy any of our heritage any further. And the government's going to have to accept that. Now, that has to be built into the legislation. And industry will have to come and work around it in a more proactive way than they have in the past, without having the convenience and the luxury of a Section 18 to rely upon to indemnify them from any prosecution if they destroy a site. There's far too much Aboriginal heritage that's been lost in this state and across Australia. We've got to take stock of it, and taking stock of it means no longer destroying Aboriginal sites when the people say to you, we do not want them destroyed. And that's got to be reflected in the legislation.